In a black-blue flash, a Corsair fighter burst around the valley's edge, turning hard just above the snow. The engine snarled. The canopy glimmered. A bomb hung from the plane's belly and rockets from its wings. Another roar shook the valley, and the next Corsair blasted around the edge. Then came a third, a fourth, a fifth, and more until 10 planes had fallen in line. The Corsairs dropped low over a snow-packed road and followed it across the valley, between snow-capped hills and strands of dead trees. The land was enemy territory. The planes were behind the lines. From the cockpit of the fourth Corsair, Lieutenant Tom Hudner reached forward to a bank of switches above the instrument panel. With a flick, he armed his 8 rockets. Tom was 26 and a Navy carrier pilot. His white helmet and raised goggles framed the face of a movie star. Flat eyebrows over ice-blue eyes, a chiseled nose, and a cleft chin. He dressed the part, too, in a dark brown leather jacket with a reddish fur collar. But Tom could never cut it as a star of the silver screen. His eyes were far too humble. At 250 miles per hour, Tom chased the plane ahead of him. It was nearly 3 p.m., and dark snow clouds draped the sky with cracks of sun slanting through. Tom glanced from side to side and checked his wingtips as the treetops whipped by. Beyond the hills to the right lay a frozen man-made lake called the Chosin Reservoir. The flight was following the road up the reservoir's western side. The radio crackled, and Tom's eyes perked up. "This is Iroquois, Flight 13, the flight leader announced from the front. "All quiet so far." "Copy that, Iroquois flight," replied a tired voice. 7 miles away, at the foot of the reservoir, a Marine air controller was shivering in his tent at a ramshackle American base. His maps revealed a dire situation around him. Red lines encircled the base. Red enemy lines. To top it off, it was one of the coldest winters on record. And the war was still new. The engine droned, filling Tom's cockpit with the smell of warm oil. Tom edged forward in his seat and looked past the whirling propeller. His eyes settled on the Corsair in front of him. In the plane ahead, a pilot with deep brown skin peered through the rings of his gun sight. The man's face was slender beneath his helmet, his eyebrows angled over honest dark eyes. Just 24, Ensign Jesse Brown was the first African-American carrier pilot in the U.S. Navy. Jesse had more flight time than Tom, so in the air, he led. Jesse dipped his right wing for a better view of the neighboring trees. Tom's gut tensed. "See something, Jesse?" Tom radioed. Jesse snapped his plane level again. "Not a thing." Through the canopy's scratched plexiglass, Tom watched the cold strands blur past at eye level. The enemy was undoubtedly there, tucked behind trees, grasping rifles, holding their fire so the planes would pass. Tom clenched his jaw and focused his eyes forward. As tempting as it was, the pilots couldn't strafe a grove of trees on a hunch. They needed to spot the enemy first. The enemy were the White Jackets, communist troops who hid by day and attacked by night. For the previous week, their human waves had lapped against the American base night after night, nearly overrunning the defenses. Nearly 100,000 White Jackets were now laying siege to the base, and more were arriving and moving into position. Against this foe stood the base's 10,000 men, some U.S. Army soldiers, some British commandos, but mostly U.S. Marines. Reportedly, the base even had its cooks, drivers, and clerks manning the battle lines at night, freezing alongside the riflemen. Their survival now hinged on air power, and the Corsair pilots knew it. Every White Jacket they could neutralize now would be one fewer trying to bayonet a young Marine that night. "Heads up. Disturbances ahead," the flight leader radioed. "Finally, something," Tom thought. Tom's eyes narrowed. Small boulders dotted the snow beside the road. "Watch the rocks," Jesse said as he zipped over them.
"Roger," Tom replied.
Tom wrapped his index finger over the trigger of the control stick. His eyes locked on the roadside boulders. When caught in the open, white jackets would sometimes drop to the ground and curl over their knees. From above, their soiled uniforms looked like stone, and the side flaps of their caps hid their faces. The rock pile slipped behind Tom's wings. He glanced into his rearview mirror. Behind his tail flew a string of 6 Corsairs with whirling yellow-tipped propellers. If any rock stood now to take a shot, Tom's buddies would deal with them. Tom trusted the men behind him, just as Jesse entrusted his life to Tom. After 2 months of flying combat together, Tom and Jesse were as close as brothers, although they hailed from different worlds. A sharecropper's son, Jesse had grown up dirt poor, farming the fields of Mississippi, whereas Tom had spent his summers boating at a country club in Massachusetts as an heir to a chain of grocery stores. In 1950, their friendship was genuine, just ahead of the times.